The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. Good morning. In the past couple of weeks, I've been talking about the loving-kindness practice, the metta practice. And today, I'd like to talk about working with the difficult person. In the metta practice, we begin with sending metta to people that are close to us, first to ourselves and then to a benefactor and then to dear friend. And then we move into people that we don't know so well, who we're not so close to, people who are more neutral to us, and then to people that we have difficulty with. The text calls this the enemy. We don't usually think of ourselves necessarily as having enemies, but we do think of ourselves as having difficult people. So I want to talk about that today. And I thinking about this today, I pulled out the Buddhist Manual of Meditation, which is this book. It was written in the first century AD, I believe, by a monk who had access to old commentaries that are no longer around. But so he pulls from sources that we no longer have, but he wrote this amazing manual that pulled together most of the meditation instructions of the time that were associated with the Buddhist practices. And this is the text that gives us the loving-kindness practice as we practice it. The practices that we use, the repeating the phrases, the going through the different categories of people, those are not in the Pali Canon. They're not recorded as being taught by the Buddha. But they are recorded in this book. And there is some understanding that the technique of practicing the loving-kindness was older than the Buddha, that it actually, that's why it wasn't in the texts, because it was just known in the time. It wasn't something new that the Buddha was saying, so they didn't particularly think they needed to record it. So that's one understanding of why it wasn't in the text and the words of the Buddha. But in any case, I pulled this out and I was looking through the section on loving kindness, which is about 16 pages out of this whole book. And more than half of that 16 pages is how to work with the difficult person. Ways to overcome resentment. More than half of the instructions. I was amazed. I thought, wow, this must be really important. So that's what I'm going to talk about today, is looking at working with resentment for people that we have difficulty with. Because typically when we start to attempt to bring kindness to somebody that we have difficulty with, what comes up is our resentment. What comes up is our difficulty in wishing that person kindness and love and happiness and peace and safety. So the instructions are that when we meet that feeling, then we need to turn to that feeling and work with it. And the texts here provide a number of different ways. And some of the ways I know of to work with or have heard about, some teachings I've heard about working with resentment were not listed in the book. And so I'm not quite sure. I know where some of them come from and not others. So I'll just go through various things that I know of, plus some of the ones from this book. But first I'll talk about, in terms of the metta practice, how we begin with sending kindness to a difficult person, attempting to do that. Because the texts actually say, Well, first of all, they say, if you don't have any difficult people in your life, there's no need to put to use this category. You know, that if you don't have any difficult people in your life, you don't need to create an imaginary enemy to which to send metta. So, if you can't think of anyone, that's fine. But usually most of us have somebody that we have some conflict with. And at one point, I think somebody actually commented that, you know, we could use ourselves in all four of these categories. You know, ourselves as ourselves, ourselves as our benefactor, because we do function as a benefactor to ourselves sometimes. Ourselves as the dear person, the dear friend. Ourselves as the neutral person, and ourselves as the difficult person. As we do all have these aspects of ourselves that we relate to in this way. So most of us do have some kind of a difficult person in our lives. So typically what we do with the metta practice is to begin as we have been. Start with self and benefactor. See if you can connect with that feeling of being able to wish well for yourself and benefactor. Even if there's not a strong feeling of kindness, if there's a feeling of being able to make that wish, then once you've gotten to that place, then move to the difficult person. I've been taught this in different ways. Sometimes I'm taught that when I do metta practice, I should start with myself and then move to benefactor, and then after that move to the dear person, and then after that to the difficult, to the neutral person, and then only after that to the difficult person. That I should try to go through all the categories through a particular sitting or through a particular period of meditation. And I have been taught it that when I'm working with a particular category, so if I'm working with the difficult person, that I should start with self and benefactor and then move to the difficult person. And if it gets difficult to work with the difficult person, one of the instructions around letting go of the resentment around the difficult person is simply to go back to self and benefactor for a while. See if you can open your heart again to the feeling of connecting with others, and then after you get back to that feeling, move back to the difficult person. See if you can maintain a sense of connecting with the difficult person. So that's one of the instructions. That's the first instruction listed in this book about how to work with the difficult person. If it feels too difficult, go back to where you have a strong sense of being able to connect with another being. So as we bring the difficult person to mind, we do the same thing that we do with self and benefactor. The practice of metta being to bring that person into our minds, an image of the person, perhaps a felt sense of being with the person. Say the phrase of loving kindness. The first, we have about four phrases we work with. Say the phrase of loving kindness towards that person. Understand its meaning. So it's not simply a mantra, not simply just repeating words. So say the phrase, understand its meaning. And then after you have done that, come back to the area in the heart, around the heart, and just see whether there's been any, what has happened to the area of your heart as a result of making that wish. So just noticing the impact of that wish on your own being, on your own heart. Now this may be where you start to feel the difficulty, that as you try to express that wish to somebody who has caused you harm or suffering, turning back to the heart, having wished them well, you may feel contraction, tension, tightness, fear, anxiety, resentment, anger, all kinds of things. This is not a mistake. This is partly the way the practice works. to reveal where we are still holding and are not able to fully connect with other beings. So in that process of doing the metta practice, we may come up against these feelings. You can try to just keep saying the phrases. If you can keep saying the phrases and be a little at ease with the feeling of tightness and contraction, that's okay too. If it gets to the point, I remember at one point on one retreat where it got so painful in the area of the heart that I couldn't even remember the metta phrases, that the pain was so strong it just drove the phrases out of my mind. I needed to stop doing the metta at that point. So if it gets that strong, maybe even before it gets that strong, that's the time to turn the attention in other ways, perhaps, to these feelings that are coming up. So the first practice that I'll talk about in terms of working with these feelings is the forgiveness practice. This is kind of similar in ways to the metta practice in that it uses phrases to... It's a reflection, essentially. The metta practice is a reflective practice. We use phrases in our mind to express how we'd like to direct our heart. So it's using phrases to express an intention of how we, the direction we'd like our heart to go. And the forgiveness practice is similar to that. The forgiveness practice, I'm going to talk about the forgiveness practice in a general way here. So it encompasses forgiveness for self, for harming oneself, forgiveness to, or asking forgiveness from others for harm that you have caused them. And then third, asking for or granting forgiveness to people who have harmed you. And it's usually done in that order because it seems generally, well, the first two, it is individual as to which would be easier, whether it would be easier to forgive yourself for something you've done or to ask for forgiveness from somebody who you have harmed. The third one is usually the hardest for people, to grant forgiveness to somebody who has harmed you. So the technique or the practice around forgiveness is to bring the person into mind, for the first one being yourself, and then to express the phrase to that being in your mind. So for self it would be, for any harm I have caused myself, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive myself. For any harm I've caused myself, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive myself. The phrases for asking for forgiveness from another are, let's see, how does this one go? For any harm I have caused you, intentionally or unintentionally, I ask for your forgiveness. For any harm I have caused you, intentionally or unintentionally, I ask for your forgiveness. The third being forgiving someone who has caused harm to you, and the phrase being, for any harm you have caused me, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive you. Now, this third one in particular can be particularly challenging because at times it may feel like we don't really want to forgive somebody and that saying that phrase is tantamount to false speech. So there are some alternate phrases that I'll suggest for you. The first part stays the same. For any harm I have caused you, or you have caused me, intentionally or unintentionally. So there's two alternate phrases. The first being, I forgive you to the extent that I am able. The second being, if you don't feel like there's any forgiveness at all possible in this moment at all, it is, I wish that someday I may be able to forgive you. So it's expressing the intention to head in the direction of forgiveness, but acknowledging that perhaps at this moment, unable to forgive. So I'll repeat those. The first being, for any harm you've caused me, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive you to the extent that I'm able. And the second being, I wish that I may be able to forgive you one day. So we'll do a guided meditation in a while, bringing in a difficult person and working with this practice in particular. This can be a very helpful practice to kind of sow the seeds for a little loosening of the heart around this difficult person. Any questions about that before I move on to another way of working with resentment? Okay. Then the book offers several other reflections in working with a difficult person and the resentment that comes up. One is, that reflecting on the fact that your resentment or your anger actually in some ways gives your difficult person, perhaps, depending on the nature of the relationship, gives your difficult person some things that he or she wants. So there's some comments in here. Let's see. It says, there are seven things gratifying to an enemy. What seven? Here, an enemy wishes for his enemy. Let him be ugly. Let him be in pain. Let him have no good fortune. Let him not have friends. Let him be unhappy. And so he claims that when an enemy wishes that for a friend, I mean, if an enemy wishes that for an enemy, if you are angry, you're basically giving the enemy his wishes or her wishes. Because in being angry, one is ugly. In being angry, one is suffering. One is unhappy. In being angry, one drives away friends. So reflecting on that capacity of anger, essentially. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, absolutely. Here, why don't you use the mic?
Well, I was listening to a talk on forgiveness once, and he was talking about how forgiveness is good for your well-being and health. And so, you know, when you're asking someone to forgive you, what if it's more about you just want that person to be well, and it's not about you? You know what I'm saying? What if you're like, I want you to forgive me just for yourself, because I want you to be well?
You know, if you don't need the forgiveness yourself, then...
I mean, isn't that more...
That's more the metta. I mean, if you really can wish that for the person, if you can bring up the difficult person in your mind and say clearly in your heart, may you be happy and feel that, then these techniques are not so necessary. This is for when we meet that resentment and that holding in the heart.
So that's about yourself.
Right, it's about letting go of the resentment in your own heart.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's what the forgiveness practice is about. It's not so much for the other person, it's for yourself. Yeah. No, no, I'm fine having a discussion. I'd prefer it.
How much is this projection onto the other person? How much is this projection onto the other person, that person being the difficult person? Is it something, for instance, in you that you're projecting onto the other person?
Well, there can be, I mean, in terms of what needs to be forgiven.
Yes.
Absolutely. There are definitely times when what we perceive as being something they've done to us is actually something we're doing to ourselves.
Like if you're angry yourself and then you project it onto somebody else.
Yes, yes. So you need to explore that. But at the same time, if you feel in some way or other that this person has harmed you, that this practice can only help to open up the heart to be able to then see, oh, I see, this part is my doing.
Yeah.
I was trying to think if there's anything more to say about that forgiveness practice. I was doing it kind of quickly. Yeah. We can take our time with this. Oh, let me turn it on here.
So the difficult person can be yourself.
There may be times that it could be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you start with yourself, or you can start with yourself, with the process of the forgiveness.
Yes, yes. Okay. With all of these difficulties. I mean, you know, these difficulties can come up with any of the categories, I think. You know, that even the dear friend, there are going to be things that come up. It's like, oh, well, my dear friend, yeah, but they forgot. They stood me up that day, you know, and there's this little bit of resentment around that. So the metta actually uncovers these little clingings and holdings that we have.
So it's just metta with a different twist then, the forgiveness practice.
In a sense, it is. I mean, it's orienting towards the opening of the heart to connect again. So it has that flavor. Any other questions or thoughts about the forgiveness practice? So I'll talk about just a couple more ways to reflect. Another one is actually to reflect, see if you can reflect on ways that your difficult person behaves, whether it's in behaviors of body, speech, or mind, ways that they behave that are inspiring and controlled. So that typically most of us have ways that we behave that are not so skillful and ways that we behave that are skillful. And we can try to turn our minds towards reflecting on the ways that our difficult person behaves that are skillful. So, for instance, you may have a difficult person here in the Sangha, you know, somebody that you have a little bit of tension with or a little bit of frustration with. They do things that hurt. And you can turn your attention to the fact that, yes, they do those things, and they come here every Sunday. Every Sunday, I see that person here. So they are really, you can kind of know that there's a sense of, even if you don't know what's going on in their mind, you can see in their behavior, they are working towards something that is inspiring. I mean, that they are working towards something that you respect. So reflecting on those qualities of your difficult person can help to allow the heart to open towards that person. We may have some, I think culturally we have some difficulty with this because we feel like, well, we're ignoring some other aspect of experience. You know, it's like, well, if I turn my attention to those positive qualities, then I'm not paying attention to the whole picture. But I'll propose to you that in the focusing on the negative qualities, we're not paying attention to the whole picture. So this is kind of a corrective to bring in the whole being. So the text goes through several ways. It says, you know, find some action in their behavior you find inspiring. Well, if you can't find an action in their behavior you find inspiring, see if there's some part of their speech that you find inspiring. And if you can't find anything in their speech that's inspiring, let's see, what is it? See if you can find some way in which their mind is controlled. Although that one's harder for me to understand how you know that. Another may be controlled in his mental behavior. Oh, okay, so here it says, his control is in worshiping at shrines, etc., evident to all. For when one is who is uncontrolled in mind pays homage at a shrine, he does not do it carefully. So I guess that it's saying basically that the mental behavior in some areas will come out in the physical behavior. So that sounds again like bodily behavior. But in any case, it says, well, there may be some people in whom there's no area of their lives that's controlled and that you can't find anything in them that would be considered inspiring. And in that case, you should reflect that they will suffer, that their actions of body, speech, and mind are conducive to their own suffering, and that essentially is a turn towards compassion. It opens the heart towards a compassion towards them. If you turn towards the fact that they're behaving in ways that are causing not only others harm, but themselves harm. Or Juliet. Why don't we leave that out there?
what if it's just the total opposite? What if there's really nothing really about them that's difficult, but it causes difficult feelings for you for whatever reason? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, so that's basically what they're saying is to reflect on the things you can see and that their behavior isn't actually causing any problem. So it's like reflecting on the aspects of their behavior of body, speech, and mind that actually you can say, oh, well, that's actually inspiring. I see that there's a way that they're moving in that direction of things that I aspire to. So to kind of turn your attention to the fact that as opposed to focusing on the suffering in your own heart around how the interaction is, turn towards the aspects of their being that are inspiring.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions about that? Any other thoughts or comments about that? Yeah.
So this may be complicating the question or another phase of the process. But let's assume that it's possible to engender in oneself a basic respect for the other person's life as life. But it can be very difficult to not judge, and their behavior is really hurting their children, and that's a bad thing. So maybe you can address that there are other phases to being at peace with them as a being is one thing, and having a judgment about their behavior is something else.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the why don't you just leave it there? Yeah, and again, this particular instruction is not about focusing on the behaviors that cause harm. It's about finding behaviors in their life that are skillful. And if you can't find those behaviors, then compassion is the movement. And that's where you bring into, you come more into the place of, okay, can I find some sense of peace around this person, although seeing that how they are behaving is just horrendous. You know, so it's kind of, and I think too, and this is not in the suttas, but it's in here. I had not written it down, but it's a reflection on karma, a reflection on the fact that we are all subject to causes and conditions. That I mean, if you think about someone in Harlem who is in, who's a drug addict and steals and robs and kills people. And think about the causes and conditions that led that person to that state. There can be, again, a kind of an opening of the heart around it, around that connection of just, yeah, I mean, if I'd been in that situation, where would I be? So we begin to see again that common humanity through a reflection on karma, through a reflection on causes and conditions. That they are at this point suffering as a result of choices that have been made in their lives, and yet the choices that have been made in their lives are a result of conditions that they have been in. So it can be very hard to break out of conditions. So that reflection on karma can also help to open the heart to someone. So let's see. So I've talked about the forgiveness practice, reflecting on, the first one being falling back to where it's easier. So try, if you have difficulty sending metta, falling back to sending metta to people that it's easier for. Then the forgiveness practice. Then reflecting that the being angry kind of gives the difficult person what they want. Reflecting on the qualities of the difficult person that can be admired, if any. And if none, then reflecting on the suffering that they are causing themselves, which will perhaps generate some compassion, opening the heart. Reflecting on causes and conditions, on the fact that karma is how we all come into this moment, and choices made in this moment take us into the future. Another being reflecting on yourself, the suffering that your own anger causes yourself. So kind of acknowledging to yourself, yes, there's anger, and acknowledging the pain of the anger in and of itself. This I look at as being kind of more the mindfulness approach. This is turning to the feeling of the resentment, the anger, and recognizing in the moment what is the experience. Letting go of the attention to the person that you're angry with, turning the attention in and feeling here and now, what is this experience? And it is usually suffering. You understand in this moment that anger causes pain for yourself. This is sensible when we think about it, but we don't often actually connect to that in the moment of the anger. You know, it's like there's some part of us that has this movement or this belief that when we're angry with somebody, that it causes them pain. And I know I had this. When I was first starting my practice, the reason that I came into practice in the first place had to do with anger. I was incredibly angry at this one person, and it was really making my life a living hell. And over the course of beginning to explore the anger, I began to see this belief that I believed it was going to harm him. And fortunately for me, at this point, I was in the Peace Corps, and I was 7,000 miles away in a South Pacific island, and he was in California, and like, it kind of became clear that this anger that I was experiencing was not doing a thing to him. He did not know about it. But I could really feel it burning me up. And so that was kind of like an eye-opener. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is causing me suffering. It's worth my time and exploration to learn how to let this go. You know, we hold on to our anger. You know, there's some kind of a self-righteousness about it, or an I'm right. I'm right to be angry. And we're harming ourselves in that process. It's painful. It's very painful. There's a story, and I just discovered, actually, that it comes from here. I don't know if this is the original source of it, about anger being like picking up a hot coal to throw at somebody. You know, you're trying to burn them, but you burn yourself first. You pick up that hot coal and you get burned before the other person. And you might miss them. Your aim might not be so good. So mindfulness, the approach of mindfulness to our resentment, turning our attention to the experience itself and really learning, understanding, this is suffering. This is suffering here and now in this being. That process going through, really connecting with that, with mindfulness, the mind starts to understand that when it chooses anger, suffering results. And so it starts to see that pattern over and over again. It sees that pattern of choose anger, suffering. Choose anger, suffering. When we're mindful of it, the mind learns. It retrains itself. Because it actually experiences, our body-mind system actually experiences the suffering of the anger. When we're not mindful, when we're caught in the story of the anger, we are reinforcing the anger through all of the beliefs that we have around it. So yes, this is going to hurt this person, and I deserve to be angry. And we don't really feel the impact on our own system. So the mindfulness, turning the mindfulness to what's the impact of the anger on our own system, trains the mind in another direction to the letting go. And we don't actually, at some point, we don't even actually have to try to let go. At some point, if we see we're headed to the point of choosing anger, it's like, oh, I don't think so. I'm not going to go there. And the mind can let go on its own through this process of turning mindful attention. Patience, non-judgmental, kind attention to the feeling itself of the anger can retrain the mind to choose differently. I've experienced this myself. It's quite an amazing, powerful practice to use mindfulness on our anger. Then there are two more practices I'll talk about, and then I'll see if there's any more questions, and then we can do a practice, a guided meditation. They suggest in the text that you reflect on what part of the person are you angry with. Are you angry with their hairs on their body? Are you angry with their eyes? Are you angry with their skin? Are you angry with their internal organs? Are you angry with their sweat and tears? Are you angry with their urine, their excrement? To kind of, you know, think about them as being a collection of parts and seeing if you can find which part you are angry with. And usually when you take a being apart like this, it's less, it can kind of be a little amusing in a way. It's like, okay, well, am I angry with their head hairs? How about their nails? How about their body hairs? What about their teeth? Am I angry with their teeth? Then there's another way to approach the, another direction to approach it, which is, am I angry with their body? Am I angry with their feelings? Am I angry with the way they perceive things? Am I angry with the way they know things? Am I angry with the way that they form behaviors? And maybe in there you'll find some kind of charge, and then you can kind of look at that piece a little more clearly. You know, because there, I can see in that situation, you know, if you're breaking it apart in that way, this is the teaching on the five aggregates, the five that the Buddha talked about our psychophysical being as being a collection of body and consciousness, feeling, perception, and mental formations. And so breaking the being apart in those places and seeing, okay, where is it? What part of that process of that person am I actually rubbing up against? One aspect of that that I think deserves particular attention is looking at views, looking at how a person views things, because I think that can be a place where we really bump up against each other. We have different views of a situation. And we resent that somebody holds a view that's not our view. There's a kind of a dramatic story of this. The details I'm telling this may not be exact. And this is a story about Gandhi. And I think this comes from the film Gandhi. I assume it's connected a true story to his life, but I can't verify that. I mean, I don't know that. So, but it's a good teaching story in any case. So there's some caveats around this story. During all the fighting in India between the Hindus and the Muslims, a man came to Gandhi once and said, "I just have so much trouble letting go of the hatred in my heart towards the Muslims." And Gandhi's instructions to him were, "You must find a child, a Muslim child, who has been orphaned, and raise the child as your own, but you must raise him as a good Muslim, not as a Hindu." So this is a real pointing to that. Views, and can we be at ease with different views in our lives? Can we see the possibility that our view is not the only view? This is a huge area of suffering in our world. Huge. Because we hold to beliefs that this is right, everyone else is wrong. So that teaching of that Gandhi gave to that man, I think, also acknowledges the length of the time it takes for a process like that to shift in our hearts. You know, raising a child, 18 years of raising a child. I can foresee that in that time, if that man followed the instructions, he would have gone through many, many things, you know, many resistances and anger about it, but if he kept coming back to that instruction, raise this child as a good Muslim, that he would be transformed in that process. So looking at views, looking at that area? Where are we holding to views tightly? And can we turn and see if we can see the world through a different lens? Is it possible to hold that more than one view might be possible? The last recommendation in here in terms of working with resentment is to give a gift that if you have difficulty with somebody, give them a gift. And, you know, this is an interesting teaching. And actually, it claims that this is they're going through this list of things, and it's like, well, if that doesn't work, then try this. And if that doesn't work, then try this. And if that doesn't work, then try this. And this is the last one, and it says, this will work. Now, I don't know if it only works after you've gone through all the others, but, you know, I can see that the movement of offering, of actually thinking, if you do this in a way of what would this person like, what would this person appreciate, not just going through the motions, but really reflecting on what this person would appreciate, it will create some connection to them. Yeah, Juliet, there's a... Well, we...
I had that experience. I just want to let you know.
Oh, you did have that experience?
Yeah.
Oh. You want to describe it?
I had a boss that was really nasty towards me, and I couldn't understand why. It was sort of like I was sort of the whipping boy for some reason. And I was like, God, why is she so mean to me? I guess because I was just... You know how some people are just so nice that you just... People kind of treat them badly because they can? I think it was like that. And so I had this friend who was like, well, just give her gifts. And so I started giving her gifts, and all of a sudden, before I knew it, she was like my best friend, practically.
So I think it does work on both sides. You know, it opens our hearts, and it opens the other person's heart.
Yeah.
So any thoughts or comments or questions? We have about 10 minutes, so we can either have a discussion or I can do a guided meditation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People with different views. What if the views of the other person that you're angry with are harmful views? I mean, the way they think about certain things.
Yes, I
can
understand.
Cause harm mm-hmm. to themselves or other people.
I think again, in that situation, we need to come to the compassion piece of this behavior. You know, reflecting on their being, this behavior, the way that they're engaging, causes harm to themselves and others. So, turning towards the compassion piece. So, you know, I think that's why they offer so many different options here. You know, it's like, okay, here's this situation. Try this one.
Yeah, I find it easier in a way to deal when you feel like you have all the control and you can be mindful and you can work on yourself and set it up as a process. But what when you're up there with the conversation, with the interaction with the other person?
Yes.
And then you get... I mean, and you have this kind of difficulty. Yeah, and what do? I cannot give a gift after this kind of a conversation to that person.
I'm sorry, you didn't quite understand the last sentence?
Let's say I will have a very difficult conversation with this person.
Yes.
I cannot solve it by giving a gift to that person.
Yes,
and
yes.
I have a hard time with that. But, so what do you do when you're out there hands-on?
In the midst
person?
Of the exchange.
Yeah, you can take the time and deal with it alone, I think, whatever it takes. But what when you're out there with that person and you get all this fire going?
Yeah.
What's the best skill to deal with it?
Well, sometimes, I mean, the best skill, at least in my experience, is to really make a practice of cultivating mindfulness, to make a practice of being aware of what's happening. And in that practice of mindfulness, slowly over time, we start to see where we get triggered, where we end up becoming angry, where we see them doing something that triggers us. So we start to see the whole dynamic. And in time, through that process, we can become less reactive. But what we need to also have is a good measure of compassion for ourselves, because very often in this process of waking up, we end up just watching ourselves, even being mindful of what's happening, we end up just watching ourselves walk into the situation, causing ourselves pain over and over again, being reactive, being frustrated, getting angry all over again, and just watching ourselves walk into that process. So compassion for the fact that we are not perfect human beings and we need to just keep trying, after engaging in a situation like that, to not then beat ourselves up over, oh, well, I did that, I wasn't doing that right, or I should have done that better. It's like, well, you did the best you could in that moment. See what you can learn from that exchange and try again. Just keep trying again. The aspects of the mind, patience and resolve, support this movement of continuing to try to be mindful over and over and over again. I mean, there are some specific things, like in engaging in a conversation with somebody, cultivating a way of speaking that adds some space to the conversation, like pausing before speaking so that there can be a little bit of reflection on what you're going to say before you say it. Or instead of, if you can't leave space, because sometimes it can feel hard to leave space in a conversation like that, to make the space by, this is a technique from nonviolent communication, to make the space by essentially saying, okay, what I heard you just say was this. And also to see if you can understand under the words, what I am hearing you say that you need is this. So there are some other techniques to work with conversation in particular. But again, whether or not you have the ability in a moment to bring those techniques up takes patience and resolve to just, okay, yep, I forgot that time, wasn't possible.
You can bring all the skills and the other person is not there with you.
Well, yes, I mean, we can only have control over our own cultivation, and we have to let go of the fact that, again, that's where compassion for the other person. Yes, this person's behaving in a way that causes harm. Yes, Sue.
I have two questions. If you can repeat me, first one is when you said let go of the anger, so I'd like to hear more about it. And two, when I experienced that with the person I'm angry with, it's just I became so unhappy. Unhappy and messed up all the gatherings. It messed up. I myself became very, very unhappy for whole time, like 1 hour or 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And I was sad and unhappy. I was completely different situation. Usually I'm happy, and then with this person and with other people so around, and I couldn't figure out why am I so unhappy about, you know. So that's what I'm at.
Okay, so the first question is, you were interested in hearing a little more about the letting go of the anger, as I was describing it earlier.
Yes.
Where the mind can let go of the right. anger. And the second question is, knowing that there's a particular person in your life that makes you feel unhappy, but you don't know why they make you feel unhappy? Is that what you said? I wasn't quite sure of that part.
Right. I became unhappy, and I wasn't figuring out why I was unhappy.
Uh-huh.
And later on, I found out there wasn't enough acknowledgement to each other.
Uh-huh. You know, okay.
Not appreciate what I have done for her.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that sounds like you were exploring your experience with mindfulness, perhaps some reflection on the situation, and then you learned, okay, this is what I felt like. I wasn't being seen.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't
right.
being seen.
Yeah.
And that is something, you know, that can be worked with internally. You know, it's like we need to see ourselves. We need to acknowledge ourselves. We need to see ourselves, that we actually don't. I mean, at a basic fundamental level, we're fine the way we are, and we don't really need other people to mirror that for us. To say, oh yes, you're fine, you're good, you did these good things. We can know that ourselves, but there's something in us that seems to need that mirroring. We need that mirroring. I think at certain stages of our spiritual development, we need to be mirrored. We need to know we're okay. And that's also a process we can turn and look. And that's, you know, that place where we need to be seen, that's touching into a core aspect of self that is actually close to a place where we can wake up more in our lives. So that when we touch into that place of, I need that to be seen, look at that yourself, see that yourself, and there's something deep under that that is, it's like the next level of the petals opening in your heart, the next opening for you in your practice. Now I have 1 minute to talk about the letting go part. So I'll just give you an analogy for this. So the way this part works is that over time, with the mindfulness, what's happening is you're seeing the consequences of the choices that your mind makes. These choices may be conscious or unconscious. They may be choices that you're not really aware that you're making, or you may actually be fully aware that you're making the choice. But at some level, whether conscious or unconscious, there's a choice to become angry. There's actually a choice. And the more mindful we get, the more aware we are, actually the more we can recognize these as conscious choices. So we start to see, this is actually something I'm choosing to do. And it's kind of mind-blowing, actually, when you see, oh my gosh, you know, I actually want to be angry. You know, that there's this movement, this direction that says, some part of me wants to get angry. So there's that recognition that we can start to see that choice point, that point where the mind is going, yep, I want to jump on that thought and think more thoughts, so I get angry at that person. So there's that movement of that direction. So when we start to see those choice points, if we have been paying attention to the consequences of anger, the mind knows really clearly, well, if I make that choice, I will suffer. If I make that choice, this body and mind will suffer. And it's kind of like in that seeing that the mind recognizes suffering's ahead, and it lets go. It's kind of like if there's a hot pot on the stove and you touch it, the body lets go really quickly, almost before you even know that you're burned. It's like that with it's like the body knows, if I hang on to that, it's going to burn. And so it lets go really quickly. And it's similar with the mind, that the mind begins to learn that anger means burning. And if it sees the choice point, it will let go of that direction, much the same way the body lets go of the pot on the stove. So it's kind of a movement of the mind, because actually the mind wants to be happy. The mind does not want to suffer. And so when it sees its own part in constructing its own suffering, it begins to let it go. So we need to stop now. So we'll talk a little bit more, one more time, about metta to just kind of finish up. Next week we'll maybe do a guided meditation on the forgiveness practice and the difficult person, and then we'll move into all beings. I guess next time I'll have to ask for topics. I want some feedback from you about what you want to hear about. I got this topic from a couple of you who had asked about metta, but I want to hear a little bit from you. One person mentioned karma, so might talk about karma at some point. But next week I'll make sure to ask that before the end of the class.